today on Inside Utah Politics, redistricting runaround again, how lawmakers are responding to the new legal action just minutes after they approved new congressional maps. And the government shutdown drags on past the week-long mark, how Utah's national parks are staying open without a ton of state funding. And engaging some of Utah's most inactive voters, we get an inside look at the campaign to encourage young voters to get involved.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I'm Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. The Utah legislature is facing another legal challenge over how they drew our new congressional lines. Lawyers for the coalition of groups pushing for redistricting argue that the legislature overstepped again when they passed a law defining how the state should test their maps for fairness. Now, Utah Republicans argue that the court requested clarity over that new law, and that new law provides that, while their opponents say the law was left vague on purpose so enforcement can change with our state. Well, to dig into the legislature's position, now I'm joined by Senator Brady Brammer. He's a sponsor of those provisions at issue. Senator, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, so first of all, I think you need to explain these tests for our viewers. I mean, these are really complicated, nuanced tests that nobody's an expert in redistricting tests. So tell us what they do.
So the tests, what essentially they do is, and the way that I would explain it is, you can have things that two people see that they take something completely different from it. A good example of that is it a gold dress or a blue dress?
Remember that viral video?
Yeah, it was all over because it was interesting that people could see something completely different. We've also seen it with the little drawing. Is it an old woman or a young woman? You know, that items that are in the eye of the beholder. And what we're trying to do is provide an objective analysis, data-driven analysis as to whether or not a map is unfair or not. Because everybody will have an opinion, but at some level, the data does demonstrate whether it is fair or not. And so what these tests do is they are the tests related to the language used in Prop 4. And these are tests that the judge did, in fact, request, in the sense that she said the language is vague and the language is nonspecific. And she said, and the legislature, quote, retains discretion to choose which tests and which court involvement there should be for evaluating those tests. And so that's really what we're after, is we don't want something where somebody says, well, I lean red, so I think this. I lean blue, so I think this. What we're after is, it doesn't matter how you lean, the test can show you by objective data rather than subjective data.
But the argument is that those tests are not objective. And I know what you're going to say. The Democrats requested some of those tests. So this is some tests that they wanted too. There are 12, I'm told, different tests you can use for redistricting measures. Why did you pick the three that you did?
Yeah, so there are numerous tests, but there are certain tests that are specific to the language in Prop 4. So
The partisan symmetry language, you're saying?
Prop 4 is the first legislation in the country that says partisan symmetry. Well, there was one other that was put in place and then removed in Missouri.
And that means you have to test the maps for fairness.
And that means, well, it's a little different than that. It is for fairness, but it's one metric of fairness. But we are required to test for partisan symmetry. And there's really only one primary test for partisan symmetry, and that is the partisan bias test.
So are you saying symmetry is different than fairness?
It's one element of fairness.
Okay.
So symmetry has a statistical definition as to fairness. So for example, if you had a party that would generally win 58% and that resulted in X number of seats, if you flipped it to the other party and they won 58%, would they win the same amount of seats? That's the basic idea on the fairness. If you put yourself in the other party's shoes, does it result in a similar outcome? And so that's the primary measure of partisan symmetry, but then there's other measures of fairness. And so what we did was we included the one test that is specific to partisan symmetry and two additional tests that were originally proposed by the Democrats. And what they did was, as soon as at first they said, well, you're only proposing one test, and they couldn't believe it. And they said, if we had more than one test, we would be fine. Well, the other test that they proposed, we accepted every test they proposed. And what we're getting to is they do not want an objective metric. And I'll tell you why they don't want an objective metric. Because they cannot pass a map given the demographics that we have, that guarantees a seat for a Democrat. And what they're after is a guaranteed seat. That is exactly...
Is that not what you're after?
No, it is not. In fact, I'll tell you why. The map that was passed by the Republicans, the day that it was passed, you know what happened? The Democrat Party said, look, there are two seats that are contestable, and we're going to put a lot of money into Utah to contest these seats. Now, if you're looking for a guaranteed result, that is not what Prop 4 is after. You want the voters to choose the candidate, not the map. And the problem that you've got when you've only have 13.9% of the state registered as Democrats, unless you put all of those Democrats into one, you can't guarantee a seat.
But those are registered Democrats, not vote people who vote Democratic.
Yeah. So there's registered Democrats, and then there's people who vote Democratic. Now, you know, if you look at our average over the past three general elections, it's usually about 28 to 32% that vote Democratic. You know, Trump gets a lower percentage from the Republicans and a higher, you know, higher against, you know, he doesn't do as well as our governor and other elected officials. Yeah. But even with that, what ends up happening, and the reason why it's unfair, is it's called an unfair pack. Because when you shove everything into one district, what you do to the other three districts is you make it entirely unwinnable. And so there are two ways to gerrymander, and one is cracking and one is packing. And so it can't be too much of one or the other, or else you guarantee seats regardless of the candidate.
So you're saying the only way for Democrats to get an actual Democrat seat is to gerrymander?
No. What I'm saying is the only way for them to guarantee themselves a seat is to gerrymander. Now, can they have a strong candidate and a weak Republican candidate and win? Absolutely. They could do that before. They did that before Prop 4 was in place. That's why we had Ben McAdams. You know, that's why we had Jim Matheson before him. We've seen that for years. Doug Owen's dad.
But that was before you redistricted in 2021.
Correct. That was before we redistricted in 2021. But there's still plenty of opportunities. We haven't had a lot of great candidates from the Democrat Party. I mean, if you look at the Democrats have been losing voters in Utah for quite some time. And the problem that they have, I mean, even in the Senate race, they didn't even run a candidate. They tried to get an independent to run instead of having their own candidate. They are losing ground in Utah repeatedly, and these are kind of the death throes of a party that isn't getting a lot of traction in Utah. And so, you know, there are competitive maps, and these maps are competitive, or else they wouldn't be putting money in. Already and announcing that they would be putting money in. And so what we're saying is, no, you don't get to pack all of it and try to guarantee yourself a seat, but there is a level of fairness within all of this that can be objectively measured that gives you a competitive seat, and we're already seeing that play out given the reactions towards the maps.
Let's take a look at some comments you made on the Senate floor in terms of these partisan tests, and you're talking about what happens if this bill goes to court, which it is, these maps are going to court, and now the plaintiffs are saying you've violated Prop 4 yet again.
It would be a malfeasance in office for a court to attempt to accept a map that has not been approved by the legislature, or for a lieutenant governor to certify and use a map that has not been approved by the legislature.
So that malfeasance in office is the language for impeachment. Were you threatening there, the judge or the LG?
No, but what I'm talking about is neither the judge nor the LG have done anything that arises to that level, but they're being asked to. The plaintiffs are asking them to do that. And that's a big problem, that a party is asking a judge to violate the separation of powers. Now, they already did that once in this case, and the judge had to come back and amend her order because she admitted that she violated the separation of powers and that she had invaded the purview of the legislature. So we've already seen that they have tried to goad this judge into places that the judge cannot go. So what does the statute say, and what does the Constitution say? The statute provides what relief is available. And that relief is limited to an injunction enjoining the use of the map.
So you're saying if she violates map C, she's got to kick it back to you guys to draw it again?
She has to go back.
She can't pick her own map.
And that's what Prop 4 said. Prop 4 only allows for that remedy. And part of that is because our Constitution provides that the legislature shall draw the maps. So Prop 4 didn't even ask for the remedy that they're now seeking. You know, there is only, the way that Prop 4 works is she can enjoin the use of the map if she finds that the process was not followed, and that is it. And in fact, she tried to go further than that and demanded that we come back into session. And then she came back and said, no, I can't do that. And so this is not a, this is more of a warning to the plaintiffs. Don't put the judge in a terrible spot. Don't be asking the judge to do things that she shouldn't do.
Well, the judge should know that. She should know she can't require you to legislate.
Well, she didn't when she issued her original order, and she had to come back and amend that. And so telling the judge, hey, this is an important point, and these are the lines that are there with regards to the relief that can and cannot be requested. You know, if we don't actually say what the lines are, then we're not putting the judge in a very fair spot to make decisions based on what they can and can't do.
We'll have to see where the litigation stands. That's all our time for today. But Senator Brady Brammer, appreciate your time today. We'll watch for that. These maps go back to court on October 23rd and 24th. So we'll see if the judge, if the judge does this, though, are you saying you're going to push for impeachment, or are you just saying we'll see what happens?
Well, I'm in the Senate. I can't push for impeachment.
Right.
So I'm not,
you
know,
but
I'm not saying.
You can push the House.
But
you can tell this House that the Senate supports it.
I would say that I don't think the judge will do that, because I think the judge will recognize that that is beyond the powers that she has, and it would violate the separation of powers.
We'll leave it there. Senator Brammer, thank you so much. Appreciate
thank
it. You. All right, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics. Utah's parks stay open despite a government shutdown. We're taking a trip down to southern Utah to find out who's paying for it. At the time of this recording, the government is still shut down for over a week. Millions of Americans have been forced to work without pay. Democrats standing firm on their demands, a funding bill that extends Obamacare subsidies and rescinds Republicans' cuts to Medicaid. Now, Republicans maintain that negotiation on those points should not be part of a vote to maintain current spending and open the government. Now, those discussions have been heated, literally spilling into the halls of Congress after failed votes.
You voted to shut the government down.
Okay. You're making a show of this to make yourself
sad.
Relevant.
It's sad. You could easily sign on to
You're
this.
Embarrassing yourself
you could
right
sign
now.
On people don't have health care.
Wait a minute.
Well, furloughed workers have no more paychecks on the calendar after this past Friday, meaning they won't be paid again until they return to work. Well, here in Utah, one of the biggest concerns during a shutdown historically has been keeping our parks open. The Mighty Five employ thousands of workers directly and indirectly and funnel billions of dollars into our state's economy. Now, in the past, the state government has stepped in to keep them open. But this year, Utah's getting a little help from the private sector. I went down to Zion National Park to see how it all works. The state says they're paying $8,000 to keep all five national parks plus one monument open during the shutdown. So these mountains you see behind me, you'd not be able to climb them if it weren't for the Zion Forever Project. For those planning the trip of a lifetime to Zion National Park, how long have you been planning this trip?
Maybe about 3 months.
The federal government being shut down hasn't been all bad.
You know, it's very good because we have free entrance to all the parks.
But the state of Utah keeping the parks accessible, that was a huge relief.
I checked online and the state said that regardless of the shutdown, the state would do what they could to keep it open.
The state is chipping in to keep Utah's Mighty Five accessible, but so far, that $8,000 a day funds limited staff just to keep the visitor centers operational. The federal government is paying for public safety and public health needs in the park. And if not for a nonprofit called the Zion Forever Project, the 19,000 visitors who come to Zion daily would likely have no park to get into.
I would say potentially Zion Forever Project is paying more than the state.
The managing director of Utah's Office of Tourism, Natalie Randall, says it's unfair to assume the state is taking a victory lap on keeping the park open when the nonprofit is contributing more financially.
You would be so surprised how hard it is to get that information. And so I don't think a victory lap is a fair statement. I would say that there was a lot of work that had to be done behind the scenes to get to this point.
Zion Forever CEO Natalie Britt isn't criticizing the state, but says that Zion Forever funds whatever the park needs on every given day, regardless of the shutdown.
We have over 500 search and rescues every year in this park, average of over two per day. We provide critical gear for search and rescue, anything they need to do their jobs better. We fund 90% of the educational department in this park.
And they've been doing it for a century.
What makes Zion Zion is what you see behind me. And 100 years from now, we need the public to be able to see these same amazing viewscapes, to experience the bighorn sheep. And that's our job, to protect and steward these incredible places for generations to come.
The state's portion, that $8,000 per day, is coming from the budget of the governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. But that pot of money has to fund all projects that drive the state's economy.
As far as the length of that, that's still to be determined. One of the key pieces being, what is the need? And so is there continually an economic impact need that will result in it?
Britt says they're ready to step up to fully fund Zion National Park if the state can't. But the situation, she says, is getting more dire by the day.
Every day that we're closed, we're not collecting that revenue, and we're using reserve funds to fund critical operations, which means come summer, we're going to have some challenges ahead of us with staffing, fee collection, and operating the shuttles.
Does the state need to give more to help Zion National Park?
No, I think Congress needs to do its job and reopen the parks.
Well, appreciate my guests there for their thoughts. And coming up today, still on Inside Utah Politics, Election Day, just weeks away, how one group is getting some of America's least engaged voters to the polls.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome back. Election season is upon us. We've got less than a month to go before Utahns return to the ballot box. These municipal years, though, tend to see the lowest turnout of any election, but I would argue it's where the rubber meets the road in Utah politics. But one group in Utah is working to change that. I'm joined today by Marina Paul. She is with Weber State Votes and the latest addition to Inside Utah Politics, because she is my intern. Hi, Marina.
Hi.
First of all, how good of a boss am I?
The best.
Okay. That was the setup question. That was a softball. All right. Tell me about Weber State Votes. What do you do and how is it going?
It's going about as well as you'd expect for a municipal election.
Sure.
But this is our program through the Walker Institute that we have at Weber State that we use to promote civic engagement, because that's all the Walker Institute is about, is getting people out there and engaged. So that's what I do with Weber State Votes. We did this last year for the presidential election. That was my first year participating. And we registered about a little over 1,600 kids on our campus, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's great.
For us, yeah. So we came back with a full swing this year for municipal elections. Our goal is 100 this year, which is less, but that's what we're expecting with Utah's participation rates.
Yeah.
But that's what we're out there doing. I'm out there every time I can at a table with all my swag and my merch and saying, this is important, your voice deserves to be heard, and this is our least active group. So they really need to be out there, because they're there.
Yeah, and you don't care what party they register for. You just want them registered to vote.
No, I just want them to register, because everybody deserves that voice to be heard no matter what. What's important to me might not be important to you, but I think the same way. If it's not important to me, it's important to you, and that deserves to be heard.
See why she's my intern. She's so good. So why is this so important to you? Like, why is registering people to vote that important?
I love politics. I love political engagement, and I don't think that's a very popular thing for people my age. I'm fairly young, but this has been a passion of mine since I was a senior in high school, and I just think it's so important. I love the government. I love to see the way it works, and I think that we just have such a disconnect now, because I think there's so much fear, especially in college students. I hear that all the time, especially last year with presidential, that people were just afraid of what was happening. So I think the easiest way to combat that is to get local, because that's like what you said, that's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
Every time I'm driving to college, that's what's happening. Those city council members, the mayor's officials, they're what's giving that to me. And I think if they're what's giving it, I deserve to give back and vote and say that this is important to me.
That's so cool. Okay, the rubber does really beat the road, because they're the ones who fix our potholes. They're the ones who decide what our city ordinances are, our zoning laws, how tall our houses can be, all those things, right?
Yeah.
So it's really important. What do you want to tell people, who, and not just college students who are not registered to vote, but anyone, why should they get engaged?
Engagement is so important, because that's how we combat fear. I know, especially with the climate of Utah, especially right now, that there is so much fear about what's going on with political violence and everything. And engagement is how we combat that, by getting out there. And it doesn't have to be a big knocking doors for a senator for their campaign. It can be a going to the park and picking up trash, or going to your city council meeting and voicing your opinion on how tall your neighbor's house is.
Because that's they're blocking my view, not in my backyard.
That's what's important, is saying that I'm a citizen here, so my voice deserves to be heard. And that's where it happens. Because I also feel one of the most important pieces of feedback we got last year was that they just don't feel like they're being heard because the national and state governments are taking care of millions and billions of people at a time. And what's so important is that these local governments are taking care of your city and your population, and that is so refined. And one of the things I love most about Utah government is we have a very next-door neighbor system. We have a citizen legislature, which is a different thing from most states. And so all these people in our municipals are also our neighbors, and it's just how we run. And I think it's awesome that you can go to your neighbor's house and they might be the mayor of your city. And this engagement is just so important to combat all these things and all this fear and everything that's happening.
I love it. Do other schools around the state have programs like this where they're registering people to vote? Do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. I think we all have our organizations, of course, like the Herbert Institute. Mm-hmm. But Walker really dives into that, and that's what I love about going to Weber State, is that we hammer it hard. We're in there. I'm there almost every week tabling and saying that you deserve this, and that's what I love so much about the faculty, too, is that we are out there, and we want these students to do that. And I think having this program especially shows that we are prepared and we are ready to lead you in the right direction to vote.
What is the feedback you're getting from other students? Are there, I think you said earlier, oh, my voice is just not heard mm-hmm. in Utah. Is that some of it?
That was a big national concern, was that my voice is just not heard. This one is really just that nobody knows what a municipal election is. And that's,
It's a city election. Municipal means city.
And that's the base point, is that no one just really knows what this is. No one really cares that their mayor is out there working every day.
How do we change that, Marina?
I think by doing what I'm doing, I think we can all get out there. You don't have to have a defined program in your college or in your community. You can go out and do that. There's all sorts of resources. We have Campus Compact that pushes that forward. There's so many resources. All Into Vote is a great one that has everything laid out for you. And the Walker Institute website itself has a section of voter tools to say, here's where you can register, here's where you can check everything, this is what you can do, and be engaged. And students on Weber State, we have our votes program, and our program's on Instagram, and you can come and join me table anytime.
Yes. So how do people vote? Tell the people how they vote right now.
Well, you can go to the Utah website, vote.utah.org.
.gov. Because I want to make sure I get it right.
That's the right one.
Yep, vote.utah.gov.
You can go there and you can check your registration. You can register. If you're not a local Utahn, you can still do the same. It'll lead you to the right place. We have portals on Weber State, a QR code that'll take you right there to wherever you need to be, because your vote can be mailed to you if you have a municipal election.
I love you so much, Marina.
Thank you.
I don't always show my bias to my guests, but this one I like. She's really good. That's thank why you. She's here, Marina. Thank you for all you do around here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. All right, well, that's going to do it for Inside Utah Politics today. Stay in touch with us, won't you, on social media. You can find me on X, Threads, Instagram, Lindsay on air, Lindsay spelled with an A. Marina does a lot of our socials for us, by the way. She's really good at it. You can also find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. Well, if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out the new show from our Nexstar National Network. This is Political Power Ranker, our national political director and the head of Emerson College polling. Look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. We carry that for you and other IUP content on our free streaming app, News for Utah Plus. You can download that now if you have Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and Apple TV. Well, thanks again for joining us. Oh, I don't want to mention this programming note for you this week. ABC 4 News is hosting two Salt Lake City Council debates. This past Thursday, our Brian McElhattan moderated a District 3 debate. And this Thursday, yours truly will be moderating a debate for District 5. So you can watch both of those live and after the fact on our News for Utah Plus. Again, that is our streaming app. Well, thanks again for joining us this week. We will see you next week.